This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
It started way back in third grade. I used to sit beside him in Lou Hayes, a pink dress.
Pretty much every great singer reaches a point where he or she can start taking it easy. Show up to play the occasional concert, play the hits for the old fans, and everybody goes home happy. George Strait is certainly at that point in his career, but there's a wrinkle. Strait dominated the country music charts for decades, and depending on how you count the hits, he's got as many as 60 number ones under his belt. 60 of them. So playing them all in one night is kind of out of the question. What Strait is doing with this little conundrum is a series of concerts in Las Vegas where over two nights, he'll play all 60 number one hits. Strait recently sat down to talk about this retrospective show with The New Yorker's Kelly Fasani. And that in itself was unusual because for many years, decades, Strait has avoided interviews entirely, avoided speaking on the record at all. That started in the 1980s after a tragedy. The death of his young daughter in a car accident.
I just didn't feel like talking about it, and I just quit doing interviews. I did want to keep singing, absolutely, but I was at the point where I'm going, all right, if this is going to cost me my career, so be it, you know. But I'm just not. I mean, it's the only way I'm going to be able to cope with it.
Right.
And so that's what I did, and it just kind of. It just kind of turned out the way it did, you know. It wasn't an intentional thing, you know, the mystique, as some people say, and all of that stuff. You know, it was just a matter of choice.
Did it make a difference in your career? Did you notice that records were moving up the charts more slowly, or that tickets were selling more slowly, or did everything just keep going the way
everything
it was?
Just kept going? It didn't make a bit of difference.
That's terrifying to hear for someone like me.
Well, you know, I hear a lot of people go, you know, I want to do that, what George does. I don't want to do interviews and stuff. I'm going to do that.
That may be where Beyonce learned her strategy from. Another Texan singer.
I know.
Who does not do interviews.
She doesn't do interviews either. Bless her heart.
George Strait is known for performing in this uniform that he's worn pretty much ever since the 1970s. A pair of jeans, typically Wranglers, and a shirt kind of starched and ironed.
I did iron my shirt, but I did not iron my jeans because I thought you'd take one look at that and say I was trying too hard.
He says that he doesn't always get recognized if he's not wearing his trademark cowboy hat. And so seeing him on the tour bus, he's wearing, you know, running shoes and a baseball cap. He's got this dark tan. And so he looked a little bit different from the George Strait on the stage. He looked like he could be any successful businessman from Texas, which in a sense is kind of what he is.
Was that a number one record?
One of the funny things about George Strait's life is that he grows up in Texas, but he doesn't really become obsessed by country music until he's in Hawaii. He's in the Army, and he has some downtime, so he gets a guitar and some songbooks and starts learning the old country songs.
I eventually got the opportunity to sing country music for the Army. You know, we got a new commanding general, General Brooks, and he had done this thing in Korea where he started these bands from Army guys. He sent out word that he was going to start a country band, a rock band, a soul band, a Hawaiian band. And, you know, certainly getting the opportunity to go audition for that and then getting that job, that motivated me a lot.
But at the time, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you eventually you're back in Texas, right? Mm-hmm. You're playing these gigs and you're playing largely Texan style country music. You're playing Western swing. Were you just imagining, oh, we could kind of do regional touring around the Southwest? Or were you thinking, no, I'm going to be on the radio?
I was totally thinking that. You know, once I played a few gigs in Hawaii and figured out that, hey, maybe I can really sing. Maybe I do have, maybe it's a possibility for me to maybe someday get a record deal and have songs on the radio. It was a huge dream.
Right.
You know, because, you know, but I'd seen it happen, you know, to people, and I'd seen it happen to Johnny Rodriguez. I'd seen it happen to Mo Bandy. I'd seen it happen to them, and I'm thinking, well, why not, you know?
All along I knew I'd lose you, though I prayed that you'd be true. In your heart, please just remember, right or wrong, I'm still in love with you.
By the time it's the late 1970s, a lot of the country music that's on the radio, it's people like Kenny Rogers, it's Barbara Mandrell, it's people singing ballads, sometimes using string sections. And it's pretty different from what George Strait is doing. You know, he's this guy playing Texas roadhouses, covering Bob Wills and Merle Haggard. And so, from a certain perspective, he would have seemed like a long shot. He would have seemed like not the most likely person to be the next big country star. A couple of things changed. He started kind of broadening his scope a little bit, showing that he could sing ballads, he could sing all kinds of country songs. The other thing that changed was John Travolta.
All right. Okay, ask me how you become a bull rider.
How do you become a bull rider?
Ooh, that's a good question.
In 1980, right, John Travolta and Deborah Winger star in this movie, Urban Cowboy, which is about people riding a mechanical bull in a bar in Texas called Gilly's, a bar that George Strait has actually played. And this sparked a mini craze for singing cowboys, and the idea of a real Texas cowboy who could sing had some glamour to it. Here's a real live cowboy. Here's a guy who's worked on a ranch. Here's a guy who knows how to rope. He had a kind of a real cowboy credibility, and that became a selling point. So George Strait gets this record deal with MCA Nashville, and his first single is this song called Unwound.
Give me a bottle of your very best, 'cause I've got a problem, I'm gonna drink off my chest.
It doesn't go to number one, but it's a pretty big hit, and it kind of announces him as a new voice in country music.
You know what? I didn't really have all that high hopes for Unwound. Mm. I thought it was a good song. It had great fiddles in it, and, you know, it was up-tempo. It was way different than anything that was out there on the radio, for sure.
Johnny Paycheck or someone had turned it down,
Johnny,
right?
Paycheck, that's the story. They'd written it for Paycheck,
right.
And he was in jail, so they gave it to me.
There was then, and remains now to some extent, a certain amount of self-consciousness about how country radio stations want their country music to sound, and whether some listeners are going to be turned off by this loud fiddle at the beginning of the song. But the song became a hit, and it really established him as someone a little bit different. He got written up as hard country, or they called him a traditionalist and later a neo-traditionalist. A few years later, he has what is perhaps his defining song, which is the song Amarillo by Morning.
Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio, everything that I got is just what I've got on. When that sun is high in that Texas sky, I'll be bucking at the county fair.
It had actually been kicking around Nashville for a while. A guy named Terry Stafford had co-written it and recorded it. A guy named Chris Ledoux, who was a real rodeo competitor, had recorded a version.
I started doing it in the bars with the band, and we kind of developed our own little sound of it.
Right.
And then when I got in the studio, we went even further with that, with the fiddle. And I mean, it was such a great song for me. You know, I loved doing it in the honky-tonks. Probably the most requested song that we would get. You know, hey, play Amarillo. Play it again. I just played it.
What's the most times you ever played it in a night?
I wouldn't do it more than twice, and most of the times I wouldn't do it again anyway. Amarillo by morning. Amarillo's where I'll be.
Have you ever been really surprised by a song that becomes a hit and you had no idea that it would take off like that?
Well, I did a song that I've come to expect it from you,
mm-hmm.
that was a number one record for 5 weeks back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the song, and I thought it was a great song, and I thought we did a good job of recording it. And but I had no idea it was going to be as big a record as it was.
Mm. Sitting smoke, crying joke
about these tears in my eyes. No clue. And then I've released some songs that I would have bet the ranch if they would have been a number one record, and they weren't.
Like what?
Well, like Meanwhile.
Mm-hmm.
I cut Meanwhile, and I'm going like, I know that's a hit record. I just love it. I did it for a long, long time in my shows just because I just loved it, but didn't even sniff number one. She sparkles, she dazzles, she lights up the room. We walk together to a table for two. Every man stares, but her eyes are only for me. We take two.
One of the things that really makes George Strait unusual is longevity and consistency. I mean, year after year, he's releasing single after single. Almost all of them are going into the top 10. He has more than 80 songs in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart. About half of them are going all the way to number one. And, you know, there is this tradition in country music, including a lot of George Strait's heroes, that have tumultuous lives. You know, Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard. George Strait is unusual in that his was the opposite. He just kind of kept singing song after song. And so by this time, he's become basically the defining voice of country music. And he was producing hit after hit after hit. That said, he also, I think, took some pleasure in every now and again tucking a little surprise into one of his albums. He had a song called Adelaida that was essentially a Zydeco song. It nevertheless became a big radio hit for him. And in 2001, he puts out an album that includes a song called Stars on the Water. It's a song written by Rodney Crowell, and George Strait's version has heavy auto-tune on it. It's really one of the first uses in mainstream pop music of auto-tune, which is a pitch correction software, as a musical instrument, and that's definitely not something that people were expecting from George Strait. You got stars on the water. Another song that a lot of people weren't necessarily expecting to hear from you that I love is When You Cut El Rey. To me, the fact that, you know, you're someone who grew up in, what, Pearsall, Texas, mm-hmm. about 90 minutes maybe from the border. Yo sé bien que estoy afuera, pero el día que yo me muera. What did cutting a song like El Rey mean to you? How did that come about?
Me and some of my friends used to ride motorcycles, and we rode through Mexico like three times. Had a blast, and every night we would have mariachis. We would put a mariachi band together or hire one to play for us. I love Vicente Fernandez,
mm-hmm.
and El Rey was just one of my favorite mariachi songs of all times, and I'm going like, I'm going to learn that song, and I'm going to, if I just do it with me and the guitar, I don't care. I took it to Nashville, and I played it for the guys, and they're going like, what? We're going to cut, how are we going to do that? And they did a great arrangement of it, I thought.
Yeah.
I'd heard this girl mariachi band in San Antonio. They were amazing. And I told them, I said, whenever I come back to San Antonio and play the Alamo Dome again, I'm going to get you guys to come up and play with me. And they're going, yeah, right, whatever. After I cut El Rey, I got in touch with them, and we played the Alamo Dome. And I've never heard a crowd go, I mean, that loud in my whole career. I mean, it was unbelievable when they kicked off El Rey.
So George Strait is semi-retired. Again, he's this year he's playing these shows in Las Vegas, but it's not a tour full-time. He has lots of time to go golfing and fishing. And the other thing that's changed is that country radio isn't really playing that much George Strait anymore. His last album was the first album of his career that didn't send a song into the top 10 of Billboard's Hot Country Songs chart.
I saw it happen to The Hag. I saw it happen to George Jones.
Willie Nelson.
Willie, I'd seen it happen, you know, and I knew I'm not immune to that, you know, that's going to happen to me.
For a lot of decades, it seemed like you were immune
to that.
Well,
I did, kind of. I hung on for dear life for a lot of years. But, you know, it's to that point now. Mm-hmm. You know, I keep thinking that, you know, I'm going to come across that record that maybe they'll want to play again, but, you know, it's not the end of the world if I don't.
He thinks of himself as an entertainer. He takes pride in that. And if you're no longer getting played on the radio the way you used to, if you're no longer on tour for half the year every year, what metric are you using to determine whether or not you're actually entertaining people? As he starts to think about this part of his career, George Strait has different options. He could go do a passion project, record an album of Frank Sinatra songs or Bob Wills songs, or he could do what Johnny Cash did, go hang out with Rick Rubin and make his version of those Solitary Man albums. Or maybe he gets back in the studio, records some great songs, and radio comes to their senses, and all of a sudden George Strait is back on the radio. I think a lot of people wouldn't complain if that were the case. I was a young troubadour when I wrote it. Song. I'll be an old troubadour when I'm gone.
George Strait. He spoke with Kelefasane, a staff writer at The New Yorker. You can find Kelefa's profile of Strait and quite a few things he's written about country music over the years at NewYorkerRadio.org. Is that a damned old mirror? Don't really tell the whole truth. It don't show what's deep inside or read between the lines, and it's really no reflection of my youth. Sometimes I feel like Jesse James, still trying to make a name.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.